Thank you for joining us for this month's TA Conversation Circle. Today's topic is on content curation. Our co-moderator today is Janet Sammons, PhD, the author of 12 books about online research and education. Her latest book is Doing Qualitative Research Online. She's currently working on a multimedia ebook and launching a monthly newsletter when the field is online. For those of you who are new to the Conversation Circle, this is meant to be an open sharing discussion, so please unmute and share if you can. If you aren't able to, please feel free to share your thoughts in the chat or just listen in. Unless you're sharing, please remain muted so that I can prevent any background noise. Please enter your name and writing discipline in the chat so we get to know each other. And who would like to be the first to share? Any starting questions, thoughts, anything like that?
So my name is Dean Bartles, and I'm running a small not-for-profit focused on advanced manufacturing technology, and I'm working on a dissertation related to additive manufacturing. I'm just here to learn.
Hello, welcome in.
Thank you.
Well, I guess I'll just, jump in. Eastern Carolina University, nice to meet you. So I wrote an article in the TAA newsletter that was in August, and then we did a webinar, and I was discussing a project that I'm doing, and kind of the dilemmas that I've encountered, because I had this opportunity. Well, to going back, like I participated in a TAA conference several years ago where I, was talking about, well, kind of what do you do when you're at the stage, either because of your age or because of your, success, that you are at a point where like no one is telling you what it is you have to do and what you have to publish and where you have to publish it. Well, then what should you do? How do you prioritize? And, I understand that, some people retire and like they're done. Like there are people that I've worked with and like, they vanish off the planet, can't be found, like email does not exist, and I understand that. They're like, okay, I'm going to go to another life. But what about, what other things could you do? And so one of the things that I had suggested in that original conference presentation was about curating your own work. And then, I had this opportunity to be a research fellow at the Center for Advanced Internet Studies in Germany. And I thought, well, that's what I'm going to do, because I've been writing about online research methods, online qualitative methods. So not big data and that sort of thing, but, the ways that we use technology to do, interviews and focus groups, or, using documents and online resources, but, in qualitative research. But obviously things have changed. So I thought, well, I'm going to go back through my, work and see, what needs to be changed. Because for one thing, when I developed the work originally, I did it very much in isolation, and this was, long before the pandemic caused us to be in isolation. But part of it was that, there's like not that many methodologists that were specializing in this topic. So it's not like I could call up my friends and say, what do you think? Because, people be like, that's interesting, but they hadn't really thought about it. Whereas now, a lot more people have done this kind of thing. So I thought, well, I need to get some input and see, like, what do people think about it? So, what my project has been to go back through, all of this, like years and years and a million versions of things and tons of diagrams and all of that, and try to see, like, what things can I easily ask other people for input on? Because obviously nobody's going to look at, this giant body of work, and they'd have to, like, it'd be a whole PhD just to do that. What input should I ask of other people, and what reflection that I would do, and looking at this material, and then, looking at, so it's not just creating, like, say, a new edition of a book where you're just kind of tweaking, but really like rethinking the whole thing. So, the term curation, that's what I thought, you know, was the term that made sense, that I'm looking, you know, to look at your work with a fresh set of eyes, you know, hopefully have, you know, opportunities to get input from others who, you know, can look at it either, you know, in my case, I had some people who were familiar with my work, look at it, and then other people who were like totally from the outside and see, you know, what they had to say. So anyway, that's kind of what I'm engaged in, but I'm interested in what, you know, what you're thinking about your work. Again, you know, what I've encouraged in the article and in the webinar, you know, was to not only think about, like, say, your published work or, like, say, finished work that was, you know, but, you know, as you're along the way, a lot of times they're like, well, you know, I've got to focus, so I have to, like, throw that aside. And that's, like, notes that were, you know, I didn't use, or maybe it was, you know, academic papers that you wrote, you know, while you're studying, or, you know, other informal things that you've written that, you know, that you might want to also include in your body of work. So I would ask you, you know, what do you think about your own body of work, both in terms of, say, reviewing, reinterpreting, rewriting, you know, developing new stuff based on what you've learned, and then on the other side, about preserving your work as an archive, because we all want, you know, to make a contribution. We want people coming after us to be able to build on what we've done, but, like, can they do it if they can't find the stuff because, you know, who knows where it is? It's all over the place. So, what do you think, and what are your questions about some of those kinds of things?
I saw, Nick, you asked the choice of the term curation with respect to content. What is distinctive about curation?
Well, like I said, I guess what I'm trying to think in terms of, say, like, if you go to an art museum, the curator doesn't just hang all the stuff. They make sense of it. You know, they're kind of like, oh, okay, well, here's, you know, these George O'Keeffe paintings, and here are the Kachinas that were depicted in the painting, you know, the artifacts, you know, and the history and the social context that, so I'm not just walking through, okay, here's a whole bunch of different pieces, but I've got something that's making sense of it, and looking for themes and pulling in other context that would, you know, help to build more meaning around it. So that was kind of the inspiration that I had for using that term.
I like that. I like that a lot. So I'm like I said, I'm working on this dissertation project, and I just had a review with my chair, and one of the things I had to do is I had to do a complete literature review of a particular academic peer-reviewed journal article that, you know, initiated my thoughts on doing research in this area. But of course, as you know, all academic peer-reviewed journal articles have a bibliography, and you have to read each one of those, and each one of those have a bibliography. You have to read each one of those. So anyway, I had to summarize, and I made this PowerPoint presentation where I summarized each of these articles, one slide per article. But my chair said, "Look, she didn't use the word curate, but I love how you just explained that, because that's exactly what she's asking me to do. She's saying, you've got to, you know, sort these in a way that you group some of them together, because some of them talk about one aspect, some of them talk about a different aspect, et cetera. And I love the visual you just gave me, that it's like you're curating art in a museum where you're just not randomly hanging things, right? You've got to group this stuff together. So I think that's a great visual. I also just took a speech class at the University of Utah, and they talked about the exact same thing about creating these visual images for your listeners. So I would imagine it's similar to your writing, right? So I think that's a great, great example you gave. I appreciate it.
Well, and I mean, one of the things that, like, say, using your example, you know, looking at, well, you've got all of these academic articles. Well, they were written in a period of time. You know, there, you know, what, it, you know, was there something around, so if it's manufacturing, something around, you know, the technology the workforce, the social attitudes? You know, are there other things that say, you know, and maybe you have to draw on, say, you know, government reports or other kinds of data that is not, you know, that's not in the, that's maybe in the articles or maybe not, you know, to try to really give that kind of, well, what was going on when this person wrote this that influenced, you know, the way that they did the study or who participated in it or what they found. But then the other thing that I would just suggest, because I can see that, you know, you are not 25 years old. And so if you're thinking like, say, well, you know, what you're doing, you know, and maybe not just with the literature review, but with your, you know, to say like, well, what is it, you know, in the whole of your work life that, you know, that your experiences and maybe things that you've, you know, written in other, you know, work reports or other kinds of things that, you know, may or may not go into the dissertation, but may be something that you want to say, I need to organize this stuff. I don't, you know, I did this presentation for this, you know, group of professionals where I highlighted some important things that I don't want to forget. So part of my, and as I was saying, some of the things that I wrote, like, I'm advising you to do the things that like I screwed up at, you know, like learn from my mistakes because like, oh gosh, I wish that I had done a better job, you know, of organizing as I went. I wasn't thinking, you know, in terms of, you know, I was just thinking like, I need to get this thing done right now. I wasn't thinking like I need to be organizing my body of work as I'm going and, you know, the kinds of notes and outtakes and those kinds of things, you know, research memos and, you know, maybe, you know, other, you know, it's like, you know, I had done, you know, a lot of other professional work besides my academic work. And those are things that now I find, you know, with what I'm doing, you know, I'm going back to like, where did I start? What was the germ of this idea? You know, what was I doing that, that took me in this direction and some of those kinds of things. So I guess part of what I'm talking about is like looking back. And the other part of it is, you know, how do you, you know, and I don't have a firm answer to this, but like, how, you know, because I think for each person it would be different, but how do you kind of manage your work as you're going so that you, you know, you have those materials to come back to, you know, in the future when you want to, you know, try to make sense of it and bring it to the present or just simply to organize it so that, you know, someone who is looking at, you know, so Jocelyn was talking about musicology, that somebody who's looking at musicology could say, oh, well, here's, you know, here's what people were thinking at this point in time. And here's what was going on.
I want to say, Janet, I'm glad, I guess I haven't been paying enough attention to my TAA emails, but I would really like to access your webinar. And what I'm hearing is that legacy, the word legacy is a part of what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's always been kind of a confusion, all of this, because I guess, you know, I logged on not to so much talk and give answers, but to hear what the answers are from other people. Although I guess I do have some ideas from your introduction. It kind of sparked my brain a little bit, but I'm gonna say my two levels of curation or legacy problems, so to speak. I've got two whole different levels. One is my textbook. I published a first edition in 2018 and trying to get back to work on my second edition, which is a complete rewrite. Mm-hmm. It's very, very different. It's not the nice little sit back and correct things right, like I wish it was. It's a gen ed music appreciation book. It's especially broad. Most music appreciation books are about classical music, and mine's not. It's only part of it. So I became even though I was trained into a specialty, I became totally a generalist with this textbook. And it's kind that's kind of a bad word in a lot of scholarship communities to be a generalist, but it transformed my scholarship. I felt it made me grow quite a bit to do this. Anyway, I'm trying to do this again even more in an even more inclusive sense than I was before. Only this time I'm approaching many colleagues for each, specialty. So I'm bringing in specialists and working with them. Some of them are willing to contribute. Some of them are willing to advise me more. So it's a really, I'm almost more of an editor than an author. And of course, I'm fine with that. I'm very, very grateful. And then on the second level, it's about my whole, what you were talking about, my whole career, all the twists and turns of my career. And I've had a lot of them because, I was trained into a specialty, but I'm a woman. And so my employers didn't take that seriously and wanted me to do something else. So I went ahead and did something else. And so I've got work in various different pockets of specialties to do. And what do I want to do with this? Some of it just maybe goes to future scholars who might be interested. And I have, by the way, in my textbook, I have lots and lots of passages that didn't make the cut for various reasons, but some fantastic topics didn't make the cut. And so, there's a lot of files I have on my computer that I spent weeks and weeks on, and was amazed at the, I got interested in anyway. But anyway, so I guess now what I do is I have to, and I wanted to say too, the reason why I've got my retirement beach background up is because my office at home here, on my left, it's like all boxes from my office. It's an actual curation problem. So I guess some of my stuff, whether it's collected periodicals, whether it's my own articles, just goes, I have to figure out a place for it with younger scholars, right? I left a bunch of things for the person replacing me in my office at work. And then the stuff that I couldn't bear to get rid of or, part with, now I've got here in my home office in boxes, and maybe I'm going to have to part with it anyway. I'm not sure. And then some of it might get reworked now that I'm retired, reworked into my next projects. So I have to decide what I want, I guess, would be my own, kind of answer.
So yeah, I mean, that's I think that's kind of the challenge. I mean, on one hand, I just and I in if Sierra sends out a follow-up email, I'll send a link to I just did a in my newsletter, which is a free Substack newsletter that I started this summer. I did a whole thing about archival research. And so there are those people, who come after us who maybe like, do archival research and find our stuff and think that's interesting. But, how can you present it in a way that will, kind of give some breadcrumbs for that person to be able to find, to have some, some organization and how do you present that? Do you do it as a written publication, do you create some, media kinds of pieces or something that's more I mean what I'm creating with mine is going to be I'm going to use Pressbooks, which is a kind of a cross between a website and a and a book. So you can organize it like a book. You can have media in it, and you can have all kinds of links, cross links to chapters and to other things. And, you know, so, but then it also can be downloaded as a PDF for someone who has low bandwidth, because I work with international people that don't have high bandwidth. And even in the mountains of Colorado, it's, you know, dicey at times. So, you know, it allows, so, you know, that was after looking for what I wanted to do, that was the format. So, you know, what kind of format, you know, do you want to do something to kind of give somebody a pathway, you know, if you're interested in these things, you know, here's where you can find my stuff, you know. So, yeah, it's a lot of work. And then, you know, so then you kind of have to say, well, like, well, what do I want to focus on? Yes, I'll put a link when we send out a follow-up email. I'll give you a link to the press books, which I, you know, I'm just starting with. So, you know, maybe, you know, at a later date, I'll do a follow-up with TAA and explain, see if I think that it did work well. But it seemed like a good, you know, from what I could evaluate, that seemed like the good way of doing it. So, you know, I think that, Nick, you asked the question of like curation for what product, you know, so it's like on one hand, thinking about the output, but also kind of the focus, you know, what is it of my work that if I'm looking back, you know, it's kind of as you were describing, Jocelyn, it's kind of like you're looking back and you're looking forward. Because you're kind of going like, well, what is it that, you know, especially for those of us who are ahead of our time and did really worthwhile things that some modern, you know, contemporary people might go like, well, you know, like that was like before the internet. Like, how could that possibly relate to me now? You know, so, you know, how do you take those things, you know, put them into a current context so that they are current framework, so they, you know, are of interest. But, you know, if you're someone, you know, it's like for me, you know, like you were talking about being a generalist, I think, you know, I'm also, you know, I have a why I know a little bit about like a whole lot of things and then, you know, a deep knowledge of certain topics. So like, you know, where do you, you know, what do you choose? Because there are only so many hours of the day, even if you are, you know, not working full time or are retired and you can, you know, have some more time, but still it's, you know, it's a lot to think about. So there's the output product, but then another question I want to just pose to you, see if anybody has thought about this is like, well, there are two things. One is, and somebody replied to one of my posts about this topic and said, well, I had all these things published on a platform that then like abruptly went out of business or was acquired or something happened to them, like they aren't there anymore. And they gave no notice, you know, that they were doing this and it's just gone. And it's a good thing I saved copies of things. So, you know, I think about like, since I'm a blogger and I ran a blog for Sage Publishing up until last spring for a number of years, you know, and I wrote tons of stuff on there. Well, you know, if Sage decides, we don't want to do this anymore, we don't want to retain this archive, you know, then all of that stuff is like gone. So, you know, you can't count on that you can go find the stuff. So there's that aspect. And then there's the other aspect of like the software changes. So, you know, if you're thinking about, say, you've curated your masterpiece thing and what format should you, you know, the stuff that you like you really want to make sure that this stuff is not lost to time. What, how do you do that? You know? And so I interviewed an archivist from the Library of Congress a few weeks ago, and the link to that will be in these posts that I'll include in the follow-up email. And I was asking her this question and she's like, they're still trying to figure that out. So I didn't feel so bad that I hadn't figured it out. But, you know, you start thinking like, well, if I can dig up things that I did in my master's degree, which are actually, you know, things I'm still interested in and might come back to, because I don't know if you've noticed that history seems to be, you know, repeating and like things that you were thinking, like, you're like, whoa, we're back to that again. like, could, if I could find the files, you know, like, could I even open them with the software we have today? How do you save stuff? So then you're like, well, then do you end up like for this one, I thought, okay, I went into my file cabinet and actually found the print copy. And I thought, oh, well, I'm glad I've got a print copy. But like, you know, you'd have to like get a whole another house just to save all, if you printed everything out, you know, how, like, how would that work? So, you know, what are you thinking about how you save your materials and organize them? Any thoughts that anybody has about that? We have some participants who I can see are online, but we're not on camera. We, you know, if you please speak up if you've got something to add or a question you would like to share.
Or feel free to put it in the chat, because I saw, Dean, you said that your camera and mic stopped working. If you want to put your question or response in the chat, feel free to do that.
I understand the problem of so many different platforms. I still have some floppy disks. And I did, however, save the floppy disk attachment to for my computer, so I can access them. But then I don't remember the passwords for everything. So it, you know, I did. I have made a lot of paper copies, and I just went through a round of what shall I shred, what shall I keep. But there is a need for file space when you have to resort to paper copies. And it's like refiling as well.
Right. Right. And now, and I mean, you know, I'd been thinking, oh, well, you know, saving things in, say, you know, Google Drive or Dropbox or, you know, those kinds of cloud things. But you're like, well, is that secure? And then, you know, don't even get me started about the question of AI, you know, like, do you want to put your stuff in somewhere? And you're thinking like, okay, you know, I've got it all organized and it's all like here in this platform. And then, you know, it's may not be secure because they changed their policies. It's really is a dilemma. And that, you know, I'm going to follow up with my Library of Congress contact and try to see if I can get some, you know, further recommendations from her, because you know, then that'd be something I can share with TAA about, you know, how do we save our body of work so that we can work with it as well as so that other people can access it. There's no easy answers to this stuff. And she was saying about the floppy disks. I have disks too, and you know, because I was writing this thing about archival research, and I had done this archival research in my master's program. Well, that was a while ago. And, you know, all of my notes and everything are on, you know, disks. Like, if I could even get something to read it, like with the software, like, you know, could she said that at the Library of Congress, they do have the capability of reading from old things. So, you know, it could be that if there's an archive center in your vicinity, that maybe they have the ability to do that. I don't know.
Yeah, just a FYI, I think quite a few like digital learning or digital, like on our campus, they've retained readers, and then they'll help you to put it in a new format so they can read floppy disks. So there's like a machine, maybe two, the library, libraries, right? They're dealing with all kinds of content. Many of certainly our libraries do receive archives from faculty or others. So I think to the extent that you're affiliated with a campus, that's probably a good first step. I just learned recently that my colleagues in my own office have one of these readers because they're involved in digital pedagogy. They work with faculty who have long histories, 30, 40 years, right? So, yeah.
So what are, Nick, what are you, you know, what's your interest in this topic?
Maybe some of the themes, maybe a transition chapter of life. So no longer publishing academically. So thinking about different audience. I think this kind of retrospection on bodies of work and pulling with a new lens. You said history repeats. That sparked, audiences repeat. You have people coming into the field that are new. So they're the new, right? They're new. They don't know. They haven't read these things that we read and have been influenced by. And so is there, and hopefully I know some things I didn't before and so have some things to add to the discourse, but and also think about different audience. So maybe writing more to students, for instance. In my field, I study learning in research universities. So there's an obvious audience there in some sense. But what format for that? Anyway, so that's one. I think that's a kind of a lens. I guess one thing I might ask you related to that is, so in my case, it might be getting into more of a less scholarly, more popular or public. And so intellectual property that puts in is put it's put into that context, there's a lot less assiduousness about giving credit to people, right? Even the New York Times doesn't cite the way we do in academia. You don't get credit, but that's the currency. So then you have this content out there if it's available to AI. So what I guess at this point, I'm not if you ha I guess if you're interested in legacy in some sense, then that can influence that. I'm not quite there yet, and I'm not sure I have enough that anybody would want to know my legacy, but okay. We have content out there with tools and a different market, so to speak. What happens to your intellectual property? What's its lifespan? How is it disconnected from you as the producer in this world we live in? And maybe that doesn't, at some level, doesn't matter to some of my objectives, but does to some others. I still need to make a living.
I think it's a critical question right now, and I'll include in another link when that you can put in the follow-up email. I just had a post in the Scholarly Kitchen this past week about that was like I was really ticked off when I saw the term used, content supply chain. And I'm like, no, like I am not a link in your content supply chain, that because especially for those of us who've been working in academic writing, I mean, if you write journal articles, of course, and review them and edit and do whole journals, like no pay, for any of this. And then if you're writing books, you get royalties, but like, I don't know, I'm not getting rich on, as my friend kept saying, like, I wouldn't put the down payment on the yacht quite yet, so like, but then somebody else can be making like boatloads of money off of your books and your stuff, and you're getting nothing. Like, I am not happy about this. I publish most of my books with Sage, but I had three books with Routledge. And they did this thing of like, $11 million was just the first payment on all these things. And I wrote, when I saw it, they didn't inform authors at all. And when I wrote to my editor and said, I don't want to be a part of this, I don't want my work just like chopped into bits and mashed up with Facebook posts and whatever else you've scraped off the internet, they said, too late. And so I'm still trying to find out. It does not appear to me that they had any thought about what they were going to do with royalties or how that would work. And so, but right now, I don't know if you're aware that in the UK, as well, in the UK, they are pushing very hard. They obviously think that they can get through the UK to basically eliminate copyright. There would be no protection. You can take whatever you want, do whatever you want with it. Nothing anybody can say about it. That's what they're trying to do in the UK and in the US. So that's like a major issue. and ties into the like, well, where do you want to post your stuff? Because, you know, it's like I'm posting on Substack. Well, you can, you know, tick a box in your settings to say, I don't want my stuff scraped by AI. But I mean, you know, I one of the things that I've done for years is video interviews. I have an entire body of work of video interviews that I did with researchers and authors that are on YouTube, you know, through Sage and other places, but you know, a lot through Sage. So I know they've got my voice, they've got my likeness. You know, it's a real dilemma. So, you know, how you protect your stuff, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to figure that out because, you know, it seems to me that also, you know, part of the thing is like speaking up that there is a value in protecting and honoring, you know, like I keep talking about, well, you know, I'm going to, you know, I don't use generative AI. I'm just not going to use it because to me, it is just a, you know, you've ripped people off to do this and somebody's making billions while the people wrote the stuff get nothing. No, it doesn't fly for me. But, you know, I keep talking about like, well, you know, when you cite someone or credit them, even in, like you say, in informal writings, you know, even if you credit them or you link to their, you know, you embed a link to their website or, you know, you somehow are, you know, you're honoring that person's work. And to me, you know, that's just something that's really important to do. So you can see that with some of these things, you know, there are dilemmas that there's not an easy answer for. And like while we're trying to figure out the answers to one problem, like 10 other things pop up. You know, like it's not an easy time.
I put Brenda Ulrich's email in the chat if you're interested. Brenda's also a member of the TA board, and you can reach out to her and ask her any questions that you would have. She's open to answering those if you're interested.
This is not a, it's definitely not a solution to what you were talking about, Janet, but in a very small way, I think I was able to kind of resolve that type of issue just with some of my learning materials. When I left my position, I kind of curated my, we used Canvas at my school. Two different people were taking over my courses. And so what I ended up doing, and one was a very seasoned musicologist. One was somebody that was about to go into he's about to get his doctorate, or start working on his doctorate. He's a grad student. And he's brilliant, but you know, he's still got a ways to go for his degree. And so I just ended up putting both of them on the copy line, setting up a website for all my lecture videos, as well as my assignments, assessments, and my the written form of my, or the at least it's not a completely written out form of my lectures, but at least my talking points, my lectures. Gave it all to them because, you know, I thought about it and, you know, I really care about the students. I had talked with them both, but we were kind of simpatico about, you know, we really want to give agency to the students, even though one of my courses is, or the history, music history survey is all classical music. It's all totally classical music, but I kind of have over the years snuck in a lot of ways to give them agency over what they want to talk about and opportunities to bring in their own videos of any kind, of any style of music. So it's just about, you know, I care about the students that I'm leaving and I also care about all the work I did over the years. I mean, it's only the last incarnation of my learning materials, but to me, that's what was distilled over all the years, because you always try to do a little bit better the next semester. And so I did that, and I sent it to both of them. So for one thing, when at least two people are on the copy line, there's a lot less chance that somebody's going to steal it. I know this is kind of worlds away from the big AI talk we're talking about now, but at least on a small level. And also, you kind of get to, where they can take it or leave it, but there's a couple people, good people that are doing their own good job that might take something from, they may or may not, it's up to them, but they might take something from it. And so it doesn't just end up nowhere. And I felt better.
So kind of, sharing your work. And yeah, I think that's a good idea. Well, one of the things that just came to mind when you were talking about your stuff in Colorado Public Radio, they have a this really cool thing, and it's just a like it's got to be under 5 minutes. I mean, it's short, but it's called Behind the Baton. And so it's a guy who's a local conductor, from he does Colorado, he's not associated with one of the major or but he's like been associated with the orchestras in our area and the music schools and stuff like that. And so it's just kind of like it's a little tidbit, where he will explain a piece of music or an idea behind the music. And I think like in terms of thinking of like new audiences, maybe there's some other channel where some of what you've done with students, could be redirected to the general public. And I'll put my email address in here on and I could send you a link to this. I love it because I mean, I particularly love classical music, but I don't know anything. I mean, I've always for years have said, everything else in my life, I'm like totally trying to analyze everything that I'm doing. And this is something where I just want to enjoy it. I don't want to be like trying to, say like, well, what does this key or whatever, but it's like it makes some sense out of it. So, there may be some other way that all of that stuff that you've done would be useful. But if you send me an email, I'll send you a link to this. You might find it interesting.
Oh,
You could
absolutely.
suggest it to the North Carolina Public Radio. Maybe they'd like to do something like that.
I just put my email up there. Everybody's welcome to it. Yeah, one of my favorite assignments to students was to do a and I would do it early in the to, it's to my music majors. I would do it early in the semester always to get a sense of whether they could write or not, program notes. And years after I started that assignment, I realized, oh, it's so much more fun to grade, and they do so much better if I tell them to focus on the audience. And there's a million different types of audiences for program notes. You could do Carnegie Hall. There's a lot of students that major in music ed, so you could do, the second grade or the fifth grade orchestra. And in that case, it's parents and family members, and they'll keep the program notes forever. So that's actually kind of a more important one. There's church audiences, and there's even I told them that Star Trek The Next Generation had, concerts with Data playing in string quartets. So, there's that, like a futuristic starship kind of thing, and told them to just make something up if they wanted to, and to really make it clear who their audience was, and do program notes. And I had so much fun grading those.
But that, I mean, that as a capsule thing of thinking, with the curating your work thing of saying like, well, what's a different audience that might be able to use what I've learned. You know, if I've been speaking to an academic audience, you know, I think, you know, Nick was talking about, you know, trying to, you know, speak to the general public. And to me, you know, this is something that I feel, you know, in the larger scheme of things is really important, because, you know, we're experiencing such an assault on higher ed. And you could see how, you know, people are thinking like, why should I care? I mean, I was at Cornell years ago, and I used to say, well, if you didn't have a PhD in the same thing that the other people had, like, you know, you'd have nothing to talk about. Like, they're so focused, you know, that's a good thing and a bad thing, you know, about academics. But, you know, how can we say, like, what is something that I've learned that would be, you know, useful, you know, mm-hmm. in a different context? And so I think that is an important question to ask when we're thinking about curating our work. So like with mine, you know, I just did a webinar last week, the software platform iTrax, which is fabulous, fabulous. You know, it's designed as a research platform versus using a commercial tool where, you know, there's all kinds of ways that the data could not be protected. And if you're doing sensitive research, wouldn't be a good idea to use it. Whereas this is actually designed for research. So they gave me the use of their platform for my project. Well, you know, those were market researchers. So, you know, it kind of, you know, looking at, well, how can things that I learned that were aimed at doctoral students and people doing, you know, learning how to be social researchers, you know, where else would that information be helpful? You know, might it even be helpful to, you know, bloggers or to journalists, you know, who want to bring in, you know, research and factual trusted information in this era of where disinformation is a problem that people have recognized, you know? So how might, you know, other writers find this to be useful? So I think, you know, it's a good point, but I think what do others have any other questions, or we're getting to the top of our hour here.
If no one else needs anything, they can jump in if they want. But I remember, Janet, when we first met before your webinar, you were telling me about content creation and organizing things, and you inspired me to join us. But you inspired me to organize all of my files because my desktop was a mess, and I was like, you're right, like, you know, like in 10 years how will my desktop look, how will everything look, you know, I start organizing now. So mm-hmm. that was great advice, and I wonder what else, like what is another first step that someone could take towards?
I think, you know, I mean, if you're thinking like, say, you know, in terms of like, how can I organize my current things so that they'll be, you know, what in the future when I want to pick this up or someone else does, how can they find it? It's almost, you know, I think about the techniques we use in qualitative data analysis, like categorizing and coding things. So it's almost like thinking, well, you know, if I'm thinking about, you know, the kinds of folders that I've got on my hard drive, you know, that, you know, maybe I'm saving the same thing in more than one folder. But if I'm thinking of the folder as, say, the category, and then within that, the subfolders are kind of would be like the codes. So, you know, maybe it's something like, you know, I've got the content of this would fit into, you know, maybe this fits into, you know, one folder. But maybe, you know, I really thought that I did a cool job on the figures, or, you know, there was something, you know, maybe it had some really good, I really incorporated a lot of literature that, you know, I want to be able to come back to, you know, so maybe I save that, like, you know, in my, you know, my an examples folder, you know, so that you're thinking in terms of almost like, you know, coding as you go. And that's something that, you know, I've tried to do over the years. I think, you know, to the extent that I did that was certainly helpful. I mean, with my project, I went back through all of the original manuscripts of all of my books, all of the figures, looking at, the different iterations of those figures. So I was really glad that I had, like, say, a folder that was just figures. So, that in other words, thinking in terms of, well, as you think about a piece of work that you've done, that you're now saying, like, okay, I'm finished with that. I've got the notes that I wrote. Maybe there are things that, as the earlier person was talking about doing a literature review, maybe it's kind of annotated bibliography. Maybe it's a list of, materials, source materials. I've got all of this stuff. How am I going to kind of put this together, in a way that I'll be able to find it again, and without having to do, like, a laborious searching through every folder to find it, which, unfortunately, does happen.
I didn't think about putting one thing into multiple folders that it fit into. That's a good idea as well, because then, like, oh, this could be with this, this could be with this. And then you don't have to
Right.
find which one you decided long ago it fit into. That's smart.
Now that
Well,
becomes.
I mean, in terms of, since I write about research methodology, like, say, maybe something is about this, it's about leadership, but it's a grounded theory study. So then I can put it in the grounded theory folder as well as in the leadership folder so that, whichever direction I'm looking for it, I could find it. Now, if you're using for academic work where, using bibliographic reference manager like EndNote or Zotero or those kind of things, the new versions of those allow you to tag. And boy, did I wish that I had done that, years ago, because I have, like, thousands of references. So, I can search within the reference database by title, but if I had done it by, like, say, the project name, like, the title of the book that it was in, or, the project that it was associated with, that would have been helpful. So, part of it is that I know that I'm guilty of, like, I'm trying to get through something because I've got another project, like, that I want to do when I'm done this one. So I'm like, done with that, and then I go on to the next thing, and I didn't tie up the loose end. So this way I'm saying, like, learn from the things that I've succeeded with, as well as the lessons learned from,
I try to categorize things, by what they are in the abstract, at as high a level as possible. But then I also have workspaces, so a lot of things that in the first category they end up in my workspace too, because just it's driven by your projects. So you want to have everything nearby, so that's been helpful.
We only have a few minutes left, but I just wanted to say, like, TAA has so many resources. Like, we learn every day that we have more resources from super far back, and we've been trying to organize them and, like, put them in a way that's easier to, like, find and, like, for members to find and use and find value out of. And this has been really helpful. I didn't realize that it was called content curation. But now that I understand that, it's easier to go through this process of all of TA's things in the past. Oh, Estelle.
I want to, just before we end, because Estelle posted a question, the use of Zoom lessons that we've used over a year at my university. So, I would just say, I mean, one of the things that I discovered with Zoom is, let's say, for example, if your university has a playlist, or they have a whatever their classification system is for their recordings, you can create, your own account, and put those videos into your own account. You know, so if you go under the like, if you're in, if they're in, at least if they're in YouTube, you know, you can share them to your own folder and create your own playlist with those. So if, in other words, you're thinking like, oh, I may not be at this university forever, but I don't want to lose this stuff. You can also, you know, use the share thing and just share it as a, an MP4 file. You know, you can download the MP4 file and just, and save it to your own hard drive. So, you know, in terms of the privacy of the students, you know, for that, I would say, well, I wouldn't share something like that publicly, but it would be still something that you could use where you could go through and either you could edit the MP4 to take out your speaking points that is your, you know, without using the students part. Now, I mentioned before that I had kind of this whole idea of curating your own work came out of a presentation that I did for a TAA conference. And in that, you know, people were sharing some, you know, what they recorded the presentation, people were sharing very personal things. I wasn't going to, you know, post that publicly. So I invited someone else who was in a kind of similar space as I was, you know, just to, so that it could be of a dialogue and not just me talking. And then we re-recorded that, you know, so I took my slides and the ideas and what I was talking about, talking points, and re-recorded that, you know, without, you know, so the conference attendees, or in your case, the students, were not there. So that's another thing you could take, you know, either edit the MP4 file to edit out the other people, or take the valuable, you know, work that you put into it and re-record if you want it to be another media piece, or transcribe it to text and then edit from there.
Thank you, Janet. We're at the top of the hour. Thank you so much,
okay,
everyone.
Thank you, everyone. And I hope that this is helpful. And I look forward to, you know, hearing, you know, what others are doing as we have our various opportunities for exchange at TAA. When I first had discussed this topic of curating the work, I said, well, you know, I think that it's very important for TAA to serve our emerging and new researchers and doctoral students and master students and whoever they may be who are just getting started. But for those of us who've been in the game for a while, you know, we face a different set of challenges. So I think it's good to have the opportunity to think about and to affirm the value of the work that we've done, that, you know, sometimes we don't, you know, get the credit that maybe we merit.
Definitely. Thank you, Janet. And I hope, thank everyone for joining us day before Thanksgiving and your busy week, the busy holiday week. Thank you for joining us and sharing your ideas and questions. And I hope everyone has a
Thanks
wonderful
so much.
Holiday.
This has been really
All righty. Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Happy Thanksgiving.
If yes, you celebrate. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.